Welcome to Woo Wooville, the next stop on your spiritual journey, hosted by three fellow travelers who found a soul connection on the path to higher consciousness. Our goal is to help you navigate the choppy waters you're likely to encounter on the spiritual path by sharing our experiences with you each week. Join us as we spill the tea on what it is like to wake up to your authentic self. Hi, I am Lola Singer, and I am here with my co-host,
Emeril.
And our other co-host, Pamela, will be on a hiatus for a while. We hope we get her back doing recordings soon. She's helping somebody who really needs her right now. So let's wish them all well. And in the meantime, Emeril and I are carrying on. And for those of you who are new to the program, we are friends who met along the spiritual path by bumping into each other at different events after I moved to a community from Seattle up north, and found both Pamela and Emeril at certain classes at a spiritual center and at Reiki circles, and I just took a liking to them immediately, even though they didn't notice me right away. I noticed them. So somehow I knew these were going to be special people in my life, and yes, they are. They're soul family. They've helped me grow, and we want to be soul family for you guys because we understand the ups and downs on the spiritual path. It's not always the smoothest ride, and we wanted to assure you, you got friends with us, and we're going to help you through it.
Yes. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Year of the Wood Snake, which is a Chinese New Year on January 29th. So that's when it starts, and we're going to go a little bit of information about it, as well as just some things connected to it, because I just love starting out new things as far as what they bring in, the things that they kind of like help us through the year. So for example, a few examples of the wood snake for 2025, what's bringing into play it this year will be growth, wisdom, intuition, strategy, renewal, and balance.
So the reason we thought this was a good topic is because when Emeril arrived to help me record today, he mentioned that he'd gone through a transformation. So he's He is definitely tying into the transformative snake energy today. So is there anything you would care to share with people about that?
Yes. Because we're trying to make this podcast be as personal as we can so that other people can connect and relate to it. One of the things when I started my spiritual journey, I really started like 100 miles per hour. Like I was going so fast. And at that time, it was kind of, I jumped in and it was kind of, that's the pace that I was going to. And I know that I was guided to go that way. But the one thing that I did is I focused so much on releasing. And the more I went through, the more at the very beginning, it's really painful, because if you never looked within and seen what really truly is there, you're going to be shocked to find out that there's a lot of hard, per se, traumas that you're healing and you're going through. And I have been going nonstop, and I'm the type that kind of like almost like worked a little on the, for lack of a better word, robotic, as far as I just did. And I really have been doing it for so long, and all these years, because I started in 2020 with my really focusing on my journey and releasing. And I got to this point where my body was really tired, and it was really tired because it was really like trying to signal to me, you've been doing a lot lately. And sometimes we always need to allow time to integrate. And I wasn't following with that.
Okay. Do you know how many years I've been waiting for him to say that? Because all of his spiritual friends have told, because he's just been go, go, go. I'm going to dive in deeper. I'm going to uncover these emotions that need to be healed. They're hidden in my subconscious. I'm going to find them no matter what. And then we kept telling him, you need to integrate after a big release. Because when you have a big emotional release, oftentimes you could expend a lot of energy crying or just feeling a chemistry in your body actually shifting. So we've been trying to tell him for a long time, you've got to take some time to integrate and rest after a big release. And he's a Scorpio, so he kept going, no, hold my beer, I'm going after the next thing. And then he'd go after something and he'd tell us about this big release he's had, you know, some kind of trauma he uncovered. He's worked with it, he's balanced the energy now. And then we go, okay, great, so take a little time to integrate, let that body catch up. And it would be like the next 2 days, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that. And then like a day or two later, it's like, oh, I did this deep meditation, or I signed up for this course so I could get some more stuff cleaned out of the subconscious. And it was just like, oh my gosh, it's so interesting that you're finally getting this lesson so big time now.
Yeah. But see, I think that the reason why I also needed to go through that process is to help others along the way, to explain certain things that they're not really explained to you on your spiritual path. So what drew me in that really kept me going forward and I guess going at 100 miles per hour is because I was uncovering so much pain. So immediately I put to myself, I want to heal this pain. So I need to go deeper. And each time I experience pain, that just means it's a sign for me to go even deeper and go more into it. Well, the thing about that is that it really takes a long time to really go through a lot of your really deep-rooted traumas in their inner child traumas, I should say. And at that time, I can honestly say, if you ask me what your motivation was, is I wanted to live a life with more balance in it, with less pain. So I was going so hard because here I thought I was going to reach this finish line. Because when we start out, we're so programmed to believe that to every beginning, there's an end. And the truth is, in your spiritual journey, we evolve, but we never really stop growing. It's a constant learning. It's a constant evolution. And today was really magical for me because I got done having breakfast and the sun was out. And there's this bench by my house. And I sit by the sun and I just kept realizing how different I've been feeling lately ever since the beginning of this year. And I asked Spirit, what is the big change? I just seem like I'm not grasping what is going on. And I heard from Spirit in almost like a very relaxed, meditative type setting that what has changed is that now I actually, my worthiness has come up, meaning like I feel worthy and my unconditional love has been growing within. So now I have unconditional love for myself. So those were huge changes because before that, we see things that like, it seems like everywhere we go, we see things that are like, they're not really working out for us. And we think, oh, it's something wrong with me. But that's part of the process. And to honor that process means to go through everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and to really be able to learn from it. So what they said to me was, you have definitely done enough releasing. It's time to focus on now opening up for receiving. You need to take a break from releasing. And funny enough, last night I did my moon water, which means you set out water, you energetically charge it with intentions. And I wrote down, everything that I wrote down was all about opening up for receiving. There was not a single thing that I wrote down for releasing. And that was really strange because ever since I wrote those, I've always write down something that I'm releasing. But if we, when we focus on energy, we want to be clear about our intention. So when we're focusing on two things at one time, what we're doing is we're really blocking ourselves. So it is my time to really focus on one thing, and that is now to be open more for receiving. And how I do that is by setting intention, by energetically being in that spot. I have a gratitude journal that I write down my intentions as if they have already happened. So that way I'm giving thanks for that. And I'm touching into gratitude And I'm also connecting with that energy to bring it forth. And this is all a learning type thing. When I first started and I started manifesting, it was so easy to manifest. Literally, I would think about it and like a week later, I would see it. And what changes that people don't tell you is that after we go on the path, at first it's almost like spirit's trying to show you, yes, manifestation does work. But later on, it tries to show you another lesson to go deeper. And that means that what you're aligned to, that's what you're going to manifest. So in other words, what's really within aligned with you at heart space, that's what you're going to bring forth. So it seems like it's tougher, but really it's more about the next evolution of that, of you manifesting what truly aligns with you rather than just anything. And we manifest all the time things, just to be clear. Example, if we feed into negativity, of course, negative events may happen to us, in which they're not. I see life differently. I don't see it as a negative so much. I see it as an eye-opening, like a learning opportunity.
Okay. So I would like to kind of backtrack a little bit for people who are new to all this.
Yeah.
So the reason he's talking about manifestation and allowing is because during a new moon, it's traditionally the time to draw something in, meaning what do you want to create in your life? What do you want to make material, which is what manifestation is. Mm-hmm. It starts with your mind and your imagination and your creativity. So you focus on what you want to bring in. And I think what Amaral's suggesting is that what works best for him now, and the suggestion he's passing on to you, is to focus on one thing.
Yes.
Per cycle. So think about what you really, truly desire. And then you, there's different ways to call it in.
Yes.
I am statements, I think, are very powerful, as mm-hmm. well as the journaling. And then you need to add your heart to it. So yep. it's a head-heart connection, because it, you make the decision of what you're going to focus on manifesting. Mm-hmm. And then once you add emotion, that is energy in motion, that stirs up the pot so that you can get that manifestation. And then the third step is what he's talking about, which is allowing.
Exactly.
So receiving is, he's calling it receiving, but it's also allow it. So you can set that intention, and then you could write it on a piece of paper, keep that piece of paper maybe till, you know, for the next 2 weeks, till mm-hmm. there's another moon cycle, and then dispose of that piece of paper. You can burn it in a fire. Some people just tear it up. But the whole idea is, once you set that manifestation, I think what Amaral's trying to say, the epiphany he got today, was you accept, and then you don't have to focus your mind on it after
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You have to allow it, because that was another thing too. So if you're constantly trying to make it work, ideally how you visualize it, then you're putting an attachment to it. So you're actually blocking it from blossoming. The thing about manifestations, it's something that comes from source. So you have to allow source to work the energy to bring it forth to you. So in other words, when you're so detailed about like, it needs to be this exact way, you're actually blocking it, because yeah. what you want to align with is the experience. What is it going to bring to you? What emotion?
So the classic example is, I want this much money. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can think you're going to get that money is to put in overtime at work. Right. So I'm going to put in a lot of overtime. But now you're cutting out the ideas of other ways that that money could come to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what Amaral's trying to let you know. So you focus on how that money is going to feel. How would it smell? You know, wouldn't it be great to see that in my bank account when I look at my mm-hmm. ledger?
The freedom you get from it.
Yeah. So it's not so much the mm-hmm. money as the feeling the money provides you.
Exactly.
So he likes freedom. I like security. So I like the idea of security.
Yeah.
So the reason we're bringing this up, because not only do we have a new moon, which is traditionally for manifesting like that, and you can pick whatever you want to manifest, you know, it just could be, you know, more love in your life, whatever it is. But also the year of the snake is extremely transformational.
Yes.
So we've got that energy combined. So even though some of you will listen to this a little bit after the first day of the new year, mm-hmm. you keep that energy's with us for a yes. whole year. So combine that with your new moon cycles every month, and you can have a powerful 1-2 punch between the new moon and the transformative power of the year of the snake. And the reason the Year of Snake is transformational is because, like Amaral said earlier, it involves wisdom and creativity, right? Mm-hmm. And balance. But what I looked at when I looked online, what I liked was they were talking about the wood would be flexibility and tolerance.
Yeah.
And so the wood, I saw that somebody described the Year of the Snake as transformation through love. And so that makes sense, because if wood is flexible and tolerant, that is love.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So this is a good time, really, to find your focus. So anything else you wanted to share about that?
Yes. So I do want to, because we're talking about new moons, obviously, when it's a full moon, it's more the opposite. So things that happen provide certain ideal energies for things to be worked with. And that's the part about alchemy that's so great, is depending on what energy is, we can use it to our advantage to set a little more strength. Example, for full moons, it's more about really releasing. So whatever is no longer aligning with you and you're willing to let go of, that's what you want to write down. But what I did this morning, last night, I did my moon water, which again, it's a cup with water. You set intentions, you talk into it, because water has memory. I wrote down all my affirmations of what I want to bring in. I folded the paper, I put it underneath the cup of water, let it charge overnight. I drank it this morning, but funny enough, it was frozen. So I had to wait till it went back to liquid so I could drink it. And right before I drank it, I said, thank you, thank you, thank you, as it had already happened. And with the intention that every cell of my body is going to be programmed to feel these experiences. Then I burned the paper and I released the ashes, because if I just let it be, for me, what that means to me is I allow it to go out into the universe to come in however it needs to. And with my affirmations, I don't do a specific affirmations of it needs to be this way. Like we just talked about, I talk about the emotions that what I want to come into my life is going to provide for me. And again, this is just practice. As you start out, especially when you're really starting out, you're trying to get your mind together. Overthinking is not really a good thing that's going to help you out on this, because it's more about allowance and just you really sharing why would this thing that you want to bring forth in your life, this life experience, how is it going to help you? How is it going to enrich your life? Things to think about. And it's really incredible the things we can do. Before I've always done journal and I've always done gratitude affirmations. There was a year that I wrote down different trips, and I did every single trip I wrote on my journal. And it was amazing to go back and see what truly you can do when you fully set your energy, your intention, and your emotions towards the same goal. So it does work, and I can definitely speak out of experience. And I just keep one thing that I do want to mention to everyone is, as we progress, we keep refining it. It's all about learning and evolving. You find out easier ways to do it. This knowledge that I know now that I feel confident about sharing, I definitely have to do a test and trial. I myself put certain intentions where I realized this isn't really going to work because it's not really aligned with me. So I kind of started refining how I wrote down my affirmations.
Can I give an example?
Yeah.
So a lot of people will say when they're new to manifestations, like, I'm going to manifest $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, for your subconscious has to believe it's possible.
Exactly.
So maybe $1 million is pretty high to shoot for. So maybe you might want to choose like $2,000. I think that you're as long as you believe it's possible, mm-hmm. possible, not probable, even possible, then I think that's where you can start setting your intention and then start adding the emotions. But if your if you know the deep in your heart that somehow your subconscious is going to go, no, you're never going to manifest $1 million, then that's probably not the goal to start with.
Exactly. And that's where they play hand in hand. And that's where I got so caught up, because I knew that my subconscious had a lot of programming that wasn't really allowing me to visualize myself with the changes I wanted to make in my life. So I decided I'm going to go 100 miles per hour on my subconscious and just releasing and healing the things that are not that are going to open up new life experiences for me. And it kind of becomes a trap, I'm not going to lie, because the more I did it, being a Scorpio, the more addicted I became to, like, okay, yes, maybe at first, like, releasing these things, you can feel them out and it feels really extreme. But afterwards, you feel great because you feel so light. And it's like an adrenaline rush in a way.
When you transform, you know, it brings spiritual energy into your body.
Yep.
And it actually changes your chemistry. I mean, that ask the Egyptians. That's what Kemet is, Egypt, right? They know all about that kind of chemistry. I had a thought and it got derailed in my little brain. Okay, it's about my little brain. So he's talking about being a Scorpio, but let's do the flip side, because I'm a Gemini.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen with people like me who are Geminis, and maybe some of you other air signs? You're going to set your intention. You're going to add your heart space. Mm-hmm. You're going to allow. Mm-hmm. And then your brain's going to say, it hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened. Well, you just ruined your manifestation, Gemini, Libra, and possibly Aquarius. So that's why you want to set it and forget it.
Yep. The more you try to push it to be exactly the way you want it to, the more you're like blocking yourself from it. And trust me, I had to learn that the hard way, because the more you say it needs to be this specific way, even my friend was telling me something really interesting that is just a little tweak to things. So for example, let's say you're looking for your dream home, right? And you find this home that you absolutely love. And then so you can say, universe, thank you for providing my dream home, this dream home to me, or even something better. Because it just opens it up where it's not fixed on that specific thing. If it happens, are you going to complain about it? Of course not. But you're always opening up to receiving and not forcing it to go a certain way.
And have a timeline either.
Exactly.
A specific timeline. That's what I was talking about with the air signs.
Yep.
Going, start to doubt ourselves that we can actually manifest. And then once you start yourself, guess what you're manifesting? The doubt.
Yep. When that's why it's called, there's a period that it's called divine timing. So divine timing in the process where it materializes into physical. And that can happen in any time. I do have to mention something that was really interesting that I kind of fell for is, you know, everybody always says like, oh, during Mercury, you cannot manifest things, or if you manifest things, they're not going to go that well, or during this, and they have all these guidelines, right? So you start thinking about how you're programmed to believe certain things don't work, and it's not necessarily they don't work. You're always manifesting, but what it means is just the energy isn't ideal for, it's not there to help you with certain things. So all it means is that sometimes you have to break out of your own head. Like, I feel like even us as spiritual people, we get so caught up in the Mercury retrogrades. We get so caught up in this and that. And honestly, as long as you have clear vision of this is what I'm bringing forth, this is what it's bringing into my life, and you're connected from heart space, why would it be wrong?
Well, I think intention is a better way,
yes,
than even clear vision. Because you can, your will and your intention can override that. Right?
Yes.
It may be a little harder to manifest, I guess, in theory, according to the astrologers, but that doesn't mean it's impossible.
Yep.
Yep. I sold a house during my condo during Mercury retrograde. No, no, you're not supposed to be signing contracts. I'm like, hey, someone wants to buy this. I'm going to sign the papers. You,
yep,
know, it's like, what I was supposed to say, no, we're not going to put the place on the market at all because in a couple of weeks, Mercury retrograde is going to show up.
Yeah.
I guess some people do, but that's becoming a slave to the exterior world rather than you applying your own will. And, you know, when you're going to be playing this game,
exactly,
which is the earth Earth game, which we're starting more and more to realize is just a video game, then why can't you make your own rules about that and override like a cheat code, right?
Exactly. And it's just, we're here to master the art of co-creating, of manipulating energy. I always thought manipulation was such a weird word to me. It just never rang right. But now it makes more sense because we are here to master energy. The more we get in balance with knowing what we truly want, what we're truly in alignment with, what we allow to come into our lives, the more starts shifting into seeing it in reality. Like our life experiences start to change. And the thing is, I think that people think that all of a sudden you're supposed to have this perfect life. And there's no such thing. It just means that you're no longer so worked up over the little things. That's true mastery. Because in order to really master your emotions and have more emotional balance, it's all about things that come to you and how you handle them, and handle them in a better way instead of you freaking out about it or all of a sudden just completely just lowering your vibration because of it. So if what we just haven't said doesn't sound like there's a lot of energy working with us, we're going to just sprinkle the little bonus that we also have a planet parade or alignment, and that's going to be lasting until the beginning of February. In this planet alignment, we're talking about the planets that are literally up on the sky for us to see with proper equipment. And some of them can actually be seen with our regular eyes. Is Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Those are the six planets that are up. Now, keep in mind that each one of these planets has different energy. So that's all playing in along with everything that's going on. So this is such a powerful time. And we really wanted to make sure that we mentioned, because we want you guys to get the, like really take advantage of this energy on using it towards the things you truly want to bring forth instead of worrying and everything that's going to bring you not things that are not so great. So just a few things that I want to mention about planets, like just these planets alone. I'm going to mention just a briefing of what each brings, what type of energy they bring, just so that way you get kind of an idea of this is the type of energy that's bringing. And imagine all these energies combined, and they're here to help us, but it's up to us to use it to our advantage or not. So first is Venus, which is the planet of love, beauty, and relationships. Then we have Mars, which is action and drive. Jupiter, which is expansion, luck, and wisdom. Saturn brings in discipline, responsibilities, and boundaries. Uranus brings innovation and sudden change. And Neptune brings spirituality, intuition, and dreams. And then on top of that, we also have the moon energy working, and we have sun. So there's quite a bit of energy really like blasting us right now. And I'm sure a lot of you can feel it. But
so I guess if you haven't set an intention for what you want to manifest by the time you hear this, our suggestion is go ahead and do it now.
Yep, exactly. It's never too late.
Yeah, and let's talk about the snake medicine too, mm-hmm. because snakes are so powerful. You may have noticed there are snakes in my place, right? Yes. I got a lot of snake iconography here. I even have a snakeskin couch.
Yeah. And I do have to mention this because I really like, we're trying to just clear up the air so you understand. A lot of the times, I think what people fear, wouldn't you agree that what people fear because of programming is like, it tends to be so powerful because it's so misunderstood. For example, me growing up from a religious background of Catholicism, I always thought snakes were evil. And as soon as you mentioned snakes, I just affiliated them with evil.
A lot of people do. And I do believe also there's with Carl Jung, mm-hmm. the psychologist or psychiatrist, he believed there were certain archetypes that create fear anyway, mm-hmm. like spiders and snakes yes. are one of them too. So like, for example, We go to the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle, and my mom would not go into the reptile house. She would not look at any of the snakes.
And see, I used to
So
have a.
she had that fear.
I had that fear too. But what's interesting is I have a lot of respect for snakes now. Before, I couldn't even, like, if a snake touched me, because you know how sometimes people have pet snakes that they have them around. When one time one put a snake through, like, through the top of my shoulders without asking, and I freaked out. I was just like, because I was so programmed to think of them as evil, but I realized that was giving my power away so much, so I had to heal that within myself to start seeing them for what they are. They're an animal just like any other animal. They're amazing. And if you actually study up on the things that they go through and they can do, it's just incredible. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is be open to the idea that snake, that kind of try to take away that whole evil snake thing, because it's
That's just indoctrination. And
exactly.
I got to put my 2 cents in here since we have time. Yes, we know that that's based on the Abrahamic religions, right? The snake in the Garden of Eden. But for those of us who like to dig a little deeper and have looked into the oral, not no, the written traditions of Sumeria, which predates that Bible, Abraham was well after the original Sumerians, we're going to be looking at Anunnaki history. And Anunnaki history traditionally had two brothers who were fighting. They came from another planet to Earth. They needed gold, so they needed somebody to mine the gold, because the people of that were natural Anunnakis eventually said this works too hard. So they borrowed some DNA from galactic people and from some Earth beings, and created what we are, the humans. So one of them was named Enlil and one was named Enki. And if you ever watched any Ancient Aliens, these would be the Anunnaki gods. Yep, they posed as gods. And Enlil did not like humans. He thus thought that we need them to mine, that's it, then we wipe them out because they're not necessary anymore. And Enki realized that by accident, they put too much Anunnaki DNA into these new creatures, and they actually knew at a deep level somehow that they would understand they are divinely connected to the highest source. So he was defending them, saying they're like us, they have the potential to be just like us. And so he wanted them to survive. So when you go to the story of the snake in the Garden of Eden, Enki is usually depicted as a snake, but that's because he worked with DNA, right? DNA, the caduceus and the medicals. And he worked with Ninhursag, who was the science officer. So that's why you see two snakes. They were changing the DNA of and creating humans. Okay. So anyway, Satan means adversary. Okay. So if you're Enlil and you want to wipe out the humans, but then Enki comes to the Garden in Eden and tells the humans, "Oh, you're not just an animal. You're connected directly to God. I'm teaching you about the tree of knowledge." And now Enlil's furious because they were not supposed to know that. So of course he calls him an adversary, right? These brothers were fighting to begin with. They had huge philosophical differences, but they were the rulers of Earth, and Enlil was actually the one who had the most power. So Enki had to be very sneaky behind his back to help humanity. And that's exactly what the story of the Garden of Eden is with the snake. The snake is Enki, giving the information to the humans that you deserve to understand you are directly connected to God consciousness because you have that gene in you where you understand that you are more than just an animal. There is a soul within you that you can connect with. So this is big stuff that goes all the way back there. So that's why the snake's associated with wisdom, because Enki is associated with wisdom. Snake is associated with creation. Enki is associated with creation because of him working with DNA. So of course, you know, when you want to be a religious control system, you don't want anybody to know you can be directly connected to the highest source, right?
Exactly.
So it wasn't convenient for the Abrahamic religions to say, oh, you know, you have that connection. So instead, what they try to tell you is you have to have a priest or an imam or a rabbi to be the connector. So then that puts you in a whole different place. And anyway, I hope that, did I make that clear?
Yes.
I'm trying to take something complex and try to explain it in a simple way.
I would say so.
So Satan is adversary. That's all it means. And Enlil's adversary was his brother Enki, and Enki was giving knowledge to the beings that were created here on Earth, which is us.
Mm-hmm. Also, another thing to bring it into current times, funny enough that that snake and that wrapped around the snake is the symbol for our health thing, where it has...
I just explained that.
Yep. But I was just saying more like bring it into perspective, because a lot of people think like, okay, well, that was used back then. But no, we actually currently use it. It's still the symbol of like the health system. And don't get me started with that. But
well, it's called a caduceus. Yes. And it's actually what Mercury carries.
Mm.
The god Mercury. Mercury is the messenger of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, connected earth to spirit, spirit to earth.
Yep.
Yeah, that's his symbol.
And along with things to just kind of go over with the snake, continuing to talk about the snake being a wood snake, one of the things, ability that a snake has is to renew itself. It's to shed away everything that it no longer is. It sheds its skin. And this we know through nature, it goes through those cycles. It even does, it's such an extreme change that when it goes through shedding the extra skin from the eyes, it's actually blind for those times. So it's under cover and it's waiting to shed away. And it kind of, I feel like the snake really identifies us, as well as anything that's no longer aligned with, we're constantly shedding, because in order for us to grow and evolve into who we're meant to be, we need to let go of anything we're not. And the snake is a perfect way to really show that to us, and how nature itself can do that. And this year is super great as far as being able to have that energy working with us to be able to let go of anything we're not. I'm also very drawn to the wisdom of the snake.
That goes to Enki, because Enki was wise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or providing wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And also our intuition. The more we start healing, we really... our intuition is kind of like a muscle. The more we focus on it, the more it grows. With our intuition comes our gifts. It's also more interconnected than not. And that's what we're kind of like bringing in. Also the balance really talks about the snake, which is balancing out the masculine and the feminine, which we kind of, did we mention that a little bit?
Well, not yet. I think we kind of glossed over it a little bit at the beginning. When we go back to the caduceus symbol of the two snakes intertwined, which is actually our DNA, it also is indicative of something in Eastern traditions called Kundalini. Kundalini is represented by a snake, because it's snake energy. It's energy that circulates just like the caduceus,
mm-hmm.
up the back, going along the spine. And Kundalini is creative life force that gets released. That's what Enki was trying to tell them. You have the ability to connect spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kundalini, when we have had a big spiritual breakthrough, sometimes that's triggered by spiritual practices like meditation or breath work or yoga. There is a dormant energy that's coiled up. I guess I didn't know that till today. I looked at what does Kundalini mean. It means circular coiled. There's your coiled snake.
Hmm.
It's potential DNA that hasn't been released yet.
Yep.
And when we go on a spiritual journey, and this happened to me because I was meditating regularly, Eventually this energy gets released. You can kind of think of it as some of the, I guess some people might call it some of the junk DNA that we have, but it was actually just turned off DNA.
Yeah.
But your spiritual awakening triggers it. And I think that's what Enki was really trying to explain. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Anunnaki did understand, because they have that spiritual connection. By the way, the Anunnaki are not reptilians. By the way, they look, if you look at Sumerians, they look like you and me, just taller and bigger. They might have the longer heads, but they are not reptilians. So that was convenient little ruse, I think, for the reptilians to try to convince us that they are. They're not. Anyway, so that's why they understand how this body system works, because it's their same body system. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, within that, there is Anunnaki that worked, that did not like humans, like we mentioned, and there was other Anunnaki that liked humans and wanted to help humans.
Yeah, so basically you were in one of two camps. You're either with Enlil, who thought, we've used them, we don't need them anymore, mm-hmm. they mine the gold for us, we're going back to our planet with the gold, wipe them out because they're not necessary. Mm-hmm. Or that you were with Enki, who said, wait a minute, they've got so much of our DNA mm-hmm. in us that they are so much like us, we cannot wipe them out. So what ultimately happened was some of the Anunnaki left, the ones that basically didn't want care about humans. Mm-hmm. They took care of their planet. My understanding is the gold worked. And then some of us stayed. Ooh, I just let something out.
Yeah.
Some of us who remember our Anunnaki lives stayed, and we are watchers and guardians. We weren't allowed to interfere with how humanity developed, but we were here to watch and oversee it and really see how what can this human with the capacity to know they're connected to source, mm-hmm. what can they do with that creative power that they have? And we know that creative power, there have been a lot of efforts to focus us on things that don't work in our best benefit. You know, you just know because you see on TV, for example, mm-hmm. the news, right? But really, we have the potential to really blossom, and I'm rooting for humanity. So yes, I'm on Team Enki. Always have been, always will be, always will care about humans. I see your potential. I want you to reach your most creative spiritual growth. So that's why I'm here to help you.
And I think you bring up a good point, Lola, because as we're doing this podcast, it's an educational podcast, but it's also an educational in many ways around, because in the spiritual community, when you're starting out and you're learning so many things, it's so easy to categorize something as good or bad because that's what we're programmed to do. But in reality, there's far more, because obviously the truth cannot hide forever. And this is kind of, I know that it's kind of a way like you're coming out and really saying, hey, this is my connection. But at the same time, I'm on this side and I've also been helping humanity. And that's crucial because we need to know the truths. Like, I feel that even in the spiritual community, there's a lot of people that allow their egos to no longer really open up to understand that just like the word good and evil, it's all based on intention. And not everything is just one thing or the other. And it's good to just understand all these viewpoints and be able to get the clear information too about it.
Yeah. So if you hear the term Anunnaki, you might have a tendency to think, ooh, they're all bad, but mm-hmm. no, part of them helped to create you, and that's why they're invested in you succeeding.
And also there's a lot of great knowledge that they brought in, like agriculture, how to just be mm-hmm. able to thrive, how to be able to survive, how to build communities, how to
infrastructure
too. So there's a lot of,
I think they brought weaving.
Yes.
Animals that didn't belong on this planet originally, like sheep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of things that Anunnaki has actually really helped the part of the Anunnakis that were always helping humanity. And they stayed because they wanted to stay and help them out. So it's not a, this just brings a lot of clarity into this topic.
Yeah, we've been kind of skirting around it. Didn't know if we should ever broach this topic, but it came up because of the snake. So there you go.
Yeah.
So when I was first learning about Anunnaki, I thought they were all bad too. I didn't even have that epiphany yet that I had been part of that lifetime. My brain just got derailed again. It was a good thought that just evaporated. I know what it was. So I was having a hard time keeping the two brothers straight. So I have a mnemonic for you. So just like old English, instead of thank you, thank ye, like Y-E, thank ye, Anki. And Lil didn't want us to, and Lil Kill. Thank ye, Anki.
I like that little slogan.
It's just a mnemonic because I couldn't keep the brothers straight. So this is why the snake is so powerful. They're a powerful symbol of the animal kingdom because we see them shed their skin. They're a powerful symbol of our Anunnaki heritage, which you all have. Mm-hmm. They're a powerful symbol of wisdom based on the fact that Anki was providing information to the humans that really helped them to thrive. Mm-hmm. It's also about flexibility, right? The way the snake moves.
Yes.
So there's a lot of powerful things to be associated with snakes. And I guess that's why we see it in so many cultures. Egypt, for sure.
Yeah.
Native Americans. Mm-hmm. Aboriginals in Australia. Hmm. I mean, I think every native culture is going to have iconography of snakes.
Yep. And I've also noticed how there's a direct connection of respect when it comes to native cultures and snakes. When it comes to religious beliefs in snakes, there isn't.
Because Enlil is the nasty god of the Old Testament.
Yep.
So that doesn't fit into the story.
Yep.
Unless, you know, if you're considering him to be Satan, then you're going to... You're Satan to him, apparently. You're both adversaries, mm-hmm. right?
And the reason why I'm just bringing it up is because, obviously, with indoctrination, there comes a lot of, like really harsh judgments. I mean, we're just growing up in it. I was taught to judge so many things for just what they are. But just bringing up that information and clearing it out and where they both stand, but there is a reason why, too.
Yeah, and there's an ancient symbol called an Orphic egg, which is a snake wrapped around an egg. That's an alchemical symbol. I don't know how far it goes back. It's a primitive symbol, and it's the symbol of life. Mm-hmm. Because the movement of the snake with an egg, you know, if you mm-hmm. can kind of think in pictorial terms, that's creating a new life.
And I'm going to share a little bit of a thing that I learned today as I watched this video that my friend made about the year of the snake, is that the snake's movement, it's like our own path, because we don't go on a straight path. We have to curve around and learn our lessons. If we did a straight path, then we wouldn't learn our lessons. So we ourselves go through our journeys are like a snake, where we have many curves, many ways that we turn through, because it's part of learning our lessons.
We wobble, we gain wisdom, we correct our mistakes, we rebalance, we wobble, we get some wisdom, we correct our mistakes. Yeah, that's expansion in many, many ways, including spiritual. I just had another. This energy is hitting me hard because I have a thought and then my brain goes on tilt for some reason. It had to do with you're talking about the. Oh, I know what it was. It's also a breath.
Yes.
The movement of the snake represents our breath. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out.
Yeah.
Do they talk about that in breathwork classes ever? It emulates the snake?
Funny enough, it as far as it goes back to when the original creator of breathwork, he was able to bring himself back to being born. But it doesn't really talk much about the snake, but they do. There is different ways to breathe that in some of the breathing they have mentioned is representing the snake.
I know Eli, my tarot teacher, he used to teach like breath work, tantric breath work in his younger days.
I think it's more mixed with tantric
breath work. There's something called a snake breath, which I guess is hard to do.
Yes.
Where you're really forcing the air out, I think, past your teeth.
Yes. Kind
of. Yeah, that one I've heard about, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm not too familiar with that one, but I'm familiar with other types of breath work. But I do, like you said, it does represent, the snake is also the movement is represented by the breath.
Yeah, and it's the dance of life. It's the dance of creativity. I'm going to try to be as PG as I can here. Because it, you know, when two people are in love, and they are showing a physical attraction to one another, their bodies move like snakes.
Yeah.
So that is life. That is life, and that's why another reason why the snake is a symbol of transformation. In addition to us seeing it shed its skin, the movement is showing us life being born.
Yep. And sensuality and sexuality.
Yeah, as a Scorpio, that won't scare you. So, I think I forgot to mention the Kundalini is represented by a red snake and a blue snake. And they're called Ida Pingala. I remember that. But there is a reason, because, you know, one is masculine, one is feminine. Mm-hmm. So just like the Caduceus, the Eastern religions are showing the same iconography, showing something we talked about earlier, the balance of masculine, feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's a chemical release in our body. It's just like, wow. I mean, it's, there's so much to know about snakes.
Yeah. And it's interesting because as you move and move forward with your spiritual growth, it's unavoidable. You'll reach to the point where your Kundalini starts awakening. And sometimes that can be really interesting because to some people, it just awakens out of nowhere. And that's kind of a little bit crazy because it's so much energy. I remember the first time it ever happened to me, I had to go into a grocery store, which happens to be Safeway, like probably one of the most busiest stores. And I just felt like all this surge of energy. I was sweating. My eyes, like everything seemed so bright. It's like almost like you want to put shades on. Everything was so overwhelming, and I just needed to come home as soon as possible. I get home, and the first thing I think about is like contacting a friend that obviously has had more experience with Kundalini awakenings in order to help me out with bringing that energy so that way it was a little bit more tolerable. The thing is sometimes it just gets awakened without us realizing. So one of the things I do want to mention is you go on your own pace. When you do see, because you're going to see on YouTube all over meditations that awaken your Kundalini, there's really like the best advice I can give. Not that I did those meditations. To me, it just kind of opened up. But nonetheless, make sure that you are ready when you're kind of going through that experience of really trying to awaken your Kundalini, because it can really create some chaos in your life if you're not ready.
You need to be mentally and emotionally prepared first, which is what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, which is doing your shadow work, clearing faith, recognizing traumas, clearing them out, neutralizing emotions from the past. You need to do that first before you have that spiritual awakening, because it is so much energy. And the energy is it's good. I mean, it's life. It's life. It's the creative force of life. And I wrote this down because I looked at a website real quickly, and I love the way they described it. It brings waves of bliss and intense pleasure.
Yeah.
Of course life does. When you're really tapping into what life is, it's going to be intense pleasure. So you'll know it when it happens. It usually feels like a little bit of a fire going up your spine. Not bad, just tingly.
Yeah.
And then one of the tricks I use for people is to imagine you can run it up and down your back just like it's a zipper, right? So you run it up. You want to treat it like it's a battery, okay? So you run the energy up your back, over your head. You arch it over your head, and then run it through your heart, down the front of your body, around your lower portion, and then bring it back up over the spine again. Run it up over your head, down through the heart, down your body, up the back, And that way you can control the kundalini. And oh, another thing, you can talk to your guides about it. So like Emerald got a little quite overwhelmed when it first got released. Mm-hmm. And so I told my guides, I'm willing to work with the kundalini, but do not give me these intense waves of pleasure while I'm driving. And do not do that while I'm at work. And they cooperated. So that's another thing people might not realize is if you do have a kundalini awakening, you can negotiate. Yep. With your guidance team. It's like, when I get home and I'm in the privacy of home, I can work with all of that energy, but not while I'm driving and not while I'm at work.
Also, another thing too, which comes with that working with your spirit team, is setting good boundaries. Like, for example, when you're sleeping, you can communicate with your spirit team of saying, hey, while I'm sleeping, I would like to, my human body needs rest. So like any type of excess energy, kundalini energy waking up, like allow it to be at flow so I can actually get my sleep and I don't have to wake up. For the longest time, I didn't know I could do that. So I would wake up every single day at 3 a.m., stay awake for maybe 2 hours, get exhausted, and then finally go back to sleep until I communicated to my guides, please let me sleep.
Like, yeah. So this goes back to intention. Yep. Like we talked about at the beginning too. You're more in charge than you may realize. So set intentions for the new moon, set intentions for releasing your kundalini in the best way possible for you and in the best place possible for you. So if you're on the spiritual path and when that ultimately happens, you're not only aware of it, you know that you are ultimately in control of it. It is not in control of you. It feels great. It's very enervating. You'll love the experience ultimately once you realize, oh, this is normal. We heard about that on the podcast we listened to.
Yeah.
So I guess we went all over the place just like a snake in this episode.
Yeah. But it's good. So one of the things I did wanted to add, because we did go all over the place, those new listeners that are listening to the podcast, I always say question everything. So anything you hear from us, get more information on it. Like find out, for example, we talk about like the beginning of the history of the Anunnaki. Just search it out for yourself. Find out who these characters truly are so they make a little more sense to you in case you're like really puzzled about, I don't know who they're talking about. I'd never heard of them. Because if you're starting out, the odds are you may not at first. And that's kind of usually information that comes later on. So really make it a point to just go in and search anything you need as far as clarification. Like, we're never going to claim we know everything. And we're just sharing our experiences and what we have learned. But it's such a broad spectrum to learn. So feel free to reach.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And we went all over the place. So take what you like, work with it. Ignore what isn't working for you right now. There's no race to the finish line. We're just here to support you wherever you are on your journey.
Thank you for joining.
Bye.
Don't forget to share.
Oh, yes. Please tell friends about the podcast if you like it.
Thank you. Bye.